You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The 76ers were in town to take on the Timberwolves. Tim was there at the game. He was in the Target Center. The Mavericks beat a team that just added Kawhi Leonard in the San Antonio Spurs. He's back from injury. The Nets beat the Wizards. All that craziness, and the most important thing that happened last night was Andrew Wiggins was busting out the shoe game. Tim has nothing to add. Tim has nothing to add to this. I realize that you are not thrilled about my my fascination with the pair of shoes.
I'm not thrilled, man. You can like whatever you want, but that was when I saw the shoes. I instantly thought, I know who will like this. The only other dude that's ever had shoes that nice, or that maybe not nice is the right word, but that extravagant, flamboyant, there's the word, was Jimmy Butler's pink shoes early in the year.
You know what they reminded me of was the Grinch green Christmas shoes that Kobe Bryant wore. What was that? I think that was 2011, maybe 2010, 2011, somewhere right in there.
You have a general range just in all of that.
This is what I do. But yeah, I just want to say for the listener, help me out because I couldn't really find a great look at his shoes in any of the timeouts. This is what I do in the morning between writing college football articles, was looking at the timeouts to try and find a great angle of his shoes. The best I can guess were because remember Adidas released the rookie shoes for him when he was in the league and they had the special brand of shoes. I think it's just a customized version of those. Some nice, a nice pair of basketball shoes. So if you like the low top with the kind of fly knit design on the side, really breathable. Interesting cushion on the sole. But those I think are my best guess at what he was wearing. Really nice shoes though. Really nice neon green. Loved them.
Yeah, they look good. His jumper didn't seem to match it for most of the game. But he looked good himself.
We're gonna get into the 76ers game. We're also going to get into the rookies, a little bit of what happened around the league, just because with Kawhi coming back, it was a little bit of a big night for just NBA in general. And then we're going to get, of course, to Editor's Choice, where Tim tells us two stories that we should go out there and read, get educated, because he's the editor. Yes. He's going to help you find the nugget that you're not looking for as far as written pieces. So first of all, let's get to this 76ers game. I think it's one of the more premier games that the Timberwolves have played this season. Would you agree?
Yeah, I'd say so.
So they lose in overtime. I thought that they played really well. I thought it was a great game, just a fun game to watch. Even if you don't have a rooting interest on either side, really fun game to watch just because who is involved, obviously, with Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, all fun players to watch. And then, of course, for the Timberwolves, you have Wiggins, Towns, Butler, Teague. All those guys are really fun to watch. Butler, 38 points. He played 45 minutes. Is he just going to drop dead at some point in the next couple weeks here?
Excuse me. I hope not, but it's amazing how well he's managed to keep himself in shape. And I mean, even after this last game, where I can tell you in the locker room, I've never seen a more grim locker room with this group. Taj Gibson, I didn't even see him go shower. He sat there and sulked and just looked as depressed as a person can look after losing a basketball game. Karl Anthony Towns, I mean, if you watch the video I put on zonecoverage.com, he looked like he had just seen a ghost. He was furious. And even before we started talking to him, he like slapped his chair in disgust, and he was visibly angry after that loss, more so than any other loss I've seen this year. But Jimmy Butler had a very Jimmy Butler quote when they were asking about minutes, and I mean, the Wolves looked gassed last night, but he thinks that if they're starting to get gas, that they should start running more laps after practice and get in better shape because they need to get ready. That was his point. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but that was his general opinion of how they played.
Well, and it's just so disappointing, too, because not only did the 76ers really show up in the overtime period, especially right away at the beginning. But the Timberwolves going into the half with the 51-48 halftime lead, I mean, you expected this game to be tight, but for them to be looking, I thought they looked really good in the first two quarters. And they had the second quarter where they led 28-27, but I thought they looked pretty solid throughout the first two quarters. And then the 76ers just came out to play in the second half of that game. And they basically hung on by the skin of their teeth to put it into overtime.
Yeah, I think even in the second half, I think they played okay. Maybe towards the end they started to lose it a little bit when the fatigue started to set in, but it was a really close back and forth game, and I'm not going to give the Wolves any crap for how they played because they don't deserve it. But the Sixers are good, and if you really want a number that really tells you just how important a player can be on a team, if you just look at the net rating, advanced stats, plus minus, what have you, Joel Embiid more or less makes the Sixers like an 80-win team when he's on the floor. And when he's off the floor, they turn back into the team before he showed up there. He was a plus 19 in the game, and they won by 6. That's about as telling as you can get when it comes to plus-minus. He is so massive for what they do, and they didn't really pull away until Embiid started hitting shots in that overtime.
Well, and granted, they weren't their full unit. You mentioned it before the game, and we were talking about it. I was talking about with Dane Covington being out is obviously something that hurts them as well. But just having Embiid on the lineup is so and he is such a great player. He is so fun to watch, and it's just amazing what he does on the floor. Basically, every play that he's out there, and he played for 39 minutes in this one, just a really, really tough player to try and scheme around or try and match up with.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an old writer peer. I mean, he still writes, but we don't write at the same site anymore. I won't call him out because I love him. But he said more or less, I think secretly Covington is a bigger loss for this team than Embiid. And while Covington's been amazing this year and he got a massive extension, he earned it. And he's had a great kind of coming back into good graces of the NBA story in his own right. Embiid is the best and most valuable player on this team, and when he's not playing, it's noticeable. And had he not played, I don't think this would have been a close game. I think the Wolves would have won by a lot of points, and I think Cat would have had a better game, would have been in a lot better of a mood as well. But it's night and day when Embiid's not on the floor. Covington is a huge player, an important player, but it's Embiid's team.
Do you think it was worth Wiggins having a good night for the amount of shots? He was 33% shooting. Do you think it was worth him taking that many shots to have a good night? And I don't want to sound hypocritical. I'm fine with him taking the 7 3-pointers, even if he only makes one. But he did shoot 24 times just overall. Are you comfortable with him taking that many shots to get 20 points?
I mean, he didn't have a good night, so I'll start with that. He shot the ball poorly. He made a lot of questionable decisions on offense. He did play well defensively, but 20 points doesn't equal a good night. So I'm totally fine with the fact that he felt the need to try to shoot his way out of the slump, because the one thing that I think Wolves fans can take solace in with Wiggins' just general struggles shooting the ball is his defense is coming along. And we've seen him shoot the ball at an elite level and score the ball at an elite level. And I assume that's going to come back at some point. It could come back tomorrow against the Kings. You never know. But when it comes back, it's going to be back. And once that's back and he's already got the defense it's seemingly there, not consistently quite yet, but it's coming along really nicely this year, he's going to be a two-way player, and he's going to be one of the more devastating players in the league as far as that goes. So that's a good sign, but the shooting isn't there right now. It definitely wasn't there last night. He's just not there right now, but it's coming.
And was there just a sense of desperation kind of from the 76ers to grab a win? Because they, what was it, six-game losing streak they're on? Was there a little bit of a sense?
They lost 4 in a row and 6 of 8.
6 of 8, that's what it was. But was there a sense in like the fourth quarter in the overtime that they really from their team that they really needed to win this one, and they were kind of just desperate and scrappy at the end of this one, and they were playing a bunch of starters that were pretty gassed, and Butler's been playing a ton of minutes, and then all that compiled with the fact that the 76ers really they felt like they needed to win this one. Was that some of a factor as well?
I've never been one to really think that one team wants it more than the other means anything. I feel like if you've ever played basketball, when you play, it's not like you have that thought in your mind in the middle of the game. I can't imagine, even though the Wolves had won two in a row, I just can't picture Jimmy sitting there like, yeah, I don't know, this one I don't want as badly as I wanted a couple games ago. Same with Cat Wiggins. Tom Thibodeau obviously has never been like that. And I can't imagine that the last time the Sixers had won a game prior to this, that Embiid was of a different mindset, or that Simmons was of a different mindset. Youth and inexperience may have something to do with it, but I just don't think it's really a thing. So, no, I'm not sure that's really much of a factor, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it may be not wanting it more than another team, but just having that that added motivation maybe is what I'm trying to get at for maybe what made a little bit of a difference, especially near the end, just because they're kind of on this skid there, dropping seeding and fell behind the Washington Wizards. So I don't know. Maybe I got nothing there. Maybe it's a little something there. Overall, what are your takeaways from this team just as far as what they did overall versus overall against Philadelphia? Tripping over my words here. Just because the bench didn't have a great night, the starters were playing a lot of minutes and they weren't able to pull this one out. And this is one of the better teams. That's not a crazy level like the Warriors, but it is one of the better teams that you're going to play throughout the year. What's your takeaway from the overtime loss, just in general, as we're walking away from this one, looking at the Timberwolves and what they've got here?
I mean, I wrote about it last night. Well, this morning, technically. I think I finished writing about 1 a.m., but stupid ESPN. No, I didn't say that.
We didn't say that. We love all of our sports, all of the sports out there. Anybody who wants to come on the show is more than welcome.
Yeah. No, anyone can come on at any time.
Gosh, ruining my branding.
Obviously. Oh, you're okay. guy who starts by talking about shoes, get out of here. No, I'm just kidding.
Gotta get the kicks market.
The Slam Magazine's gonna love you one day. The main thing that I took from this game was, I mean, just fatigue. I know it's kind of beating a dead horse at this point, but I think it really showed.
Which is what Thibodeau's doing.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Sorry. No, continue.
Get it together, Colton.
I'm trying so hard.
You could just tell, like, at the end of the game, a few of us were talking about it. Taj Gibson could hardly stand up before he fouled out. Karl Anthony Towns looked tired. The only one that didn't look tired is Jimmy Butler, and if you've ever read the piece that he was written about him at Vice Sports, or the one that was written about him at Sports Illustrated, he's not human in the way that he prepares himself in the summer. He doesn't do things that humans do. He pretty much commits his entire summer to working out and getting into shape. It's what he does. The rest of the team, they're like everybody else. I mean, they're in incredible shape. They're pro athletes, but they're not dedicating their entire lives to basketball. They have families. They have other things that they like to do in their free time. So while they're in great shape, they're going to get tired when they play 40 plus minutes a game. And that's happening to quite a few of them. And I think it's starting to show late in these games. And in an overtime game like this, especially when it's pushed back later in the day, I could see that having an impact.
And you bring up the articles in the offseason. I know it's kind of cliche to make this comparison, but the way he approaches an offseason and the way he wants to approach a basketball season and how he prepares for it, little LeBron-esque, don't you think?
It's very LeBron-esque. Very LeBron. He's the only other one that I could think of that does stuff like that. I'm sure there are others, but it's LeBron and Butler are the two that have always come to mind for me, who are both just like robots with it.
Well, and that's what makes it really exciting when he came, was that it wasn't that he was just going to be a really good player. He was going to teach these guys how to approach. And that's why I think he does so much for the team just in general, not even on the basketball court, is because in this offseason coming up here, he's going to teach these guys how to prepare for an elite level of basketball in the offseason, not just how to play during the season. He's going to teach these guys how to get ready for a basketball season because he is just a maniacal preparer of what he wants to do, of honing his skills. And he really, really cares about this, and this kind of consumes him to an elite level, I would say, just because of the way LeBron does it, the way other great athletes have done it in the past. You think about Tom Brady, the way they approach the offseason. He's one of those guys, and so he's going to be good for this team in so many ways outside of what he does. Obviously, with the 38 points, that's amazing, but he's going to be good for this team in so many other ways too.
Absolutely. I love the way that he plays, like the way that he approaches the game. I mean, you said it well. It's really hard to emulate what he does without completely giving up your livelihood in the offseason. I think most players, and justifiably so, are not willing to do that. But Butler is, and it's great. And hopefully players are able to at least somewhat emulate what he does, whether it's even a fraction of it, or maybe even a little bit more than that. But you can't expect the people to be superhuman or freaks in the same way that Jimmy Butler is, but it's good to have someone like that on this team.
Exactly, sure. Exactly. All right, we are going to go to a quick break here, and then after that we've got some things around the NBA that we need to cover. But first, let's hear from some of our sponsors. Fantasy basketball fans, listen up. If you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play real-life snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of last-minute injuries for you. Draft starts every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part? Play for cold hard cash. Draft starts from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. No salary cap, playing real live snake drafts, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league. Join my draft right now. You can go on the Draft app or on draft.com and use my promo code LOTWOLVES, that's LOTWOLVES, to get a cash back bonus up to $100. And you can join one of my Locked On Wolves draft leagues. You can play against me for cold hard cash tonight. Go up against me and take my money. Why don't you come and join tonight using the promo code LOTWOLVES. All right, so with the 76ers in town, that kind of brings to one of the question to mind, and you said that you were getting to this topic via some writing on zone coverage. Ben Simmons, he's playing his rookie year, and this is really a premier year, a premier season for rookies in general with the class that we had coming in, with how well they've performed. So many rookies playing so well this season. What is your overall takeaway since the 76ers were in town? What is your overall takeaway of this rookie class in general so far in the season? We're about 26, 27 for roughly most of the teams in the NBA, 26, 27 games in. What do you make of this rookie class?
It's an okay class overall. I mean, the big stars haven't really been able to show themselves early. The big star we saw last night, he didn't have a great game, but Ben Simmons isn't part of the draft class of this year, but he's been far and away the best rookie, and I'm about to write about it for Sporting News, plug, plug, plug. but he leads the league amongst rookies in points, in rebounds, in assists. He's in the top five in effective field goal percentage and true shooting percentage. He does everything. I haven't seen a player, and this is the second time we're going to use this guy as a comparison, but he's a great sort of marking stick for where you want to be. He's the best rookie that plays the way he plays I've seen since LeBron. Just the way that he's able to score, the way he's able to rebound, the way he's able to pass. He also knows how to cut. The shooting needs to come along, but he's incredible. I mean, other guys have definitely shown themselves. I think the all-rookie first team has a lot of really good players. Donovan Mitchell has come out of nowhere and surprised a lot of people. Kyle Kuzma has been great this year. And I think the fact that Jason Tatum plays for one of the best teams in the league is kind of made it harder for him to showcase himself personally, but he's been outstanding too. But when it comes to like the top of the class, it's got to be Ben Simmons. He's been incredible this year. You could justify being an all-star this year in the East.
You mentioned that not all the players at the top of the draft were performing. Is some of that the fault of particularly the media? Because we in the media made so much of a big deal of guys like Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball, and these guys were players who we knew were going to have struggles. Lonzo Ball with the awkward shot and the awkward release, and maybe making overhyping his summer league when we know teams don't really play defense in summer league. And then you have guys like Markelle Fultz, who we knew he was kind of an odd prospect out of Washington. We weren't really sure how he was going to perform. And then you have the stuff over the summer of him trying to fix his own free throw shot without the team stepping in and guiding him through that. Did we make too much of some of these recruits and not pay attention to others like we should have? Like a Donovan Mitchell comes to mind, where we really should have had him high on draft boards. We really should have paid attention to him. Or is it a matter of some players just fell into really good spots and some players did not?
It's not the media's fault that Donovan Mitchell was never considered a higher draft prospect. No, I mean he went at the bottom of the lottery because he had some question marks. He stayed through a sophomore year because they weren't sure he was big enough and they weren't sure he had enough athleticism and wasn't skilled enough to really do what he does. They weren't sure that his jump shot would translate because that doesn't always translate right away, and it has. Markelle Fultz is sort of a weird situation because the only reason it sounds like that he was adjusting his free throw shot was because of the shoulder injury, and I'm not sure how aware the team was of it. I haven't done extensive research on it, but it sounds like he doesn't have pain in his shoulder anymore, and when he gets back, I think the assumption, or at least the hope, is that he'll be fine. Lonzo Ball, if anyone thought that he was going to be a good shooter right away, I mean, they're silly. He was much more a Ricky Rubio, Rajon Rondo type prospect coming out than let's say a Chris Paul, for example. He wasn't going to be able to shoot right away, and that anyone who thought so, I think, just didn't really watch him at all in college. So the media hyped up Ball in a very different way, and it's kind of unfortunate because I think the people that surround Lonzo Ball are more the people that have kind of helped him garner a bad reputation. I'm rooting for him because I don't care what his dad says. I don't pay attention to that sort of stuff. But he himself is a skilled player. He has nights where he looks awful and doesn't shoot well, but he's a gifted passer. He's a good rebounder, and he's an improving defender. If he can get that jump shot figured out, he's going to be one of the best point guards in the league, and I feel comfortable saying that.
Yeah, and the thing that made him so good, even at UCLA, even when he was able to knock down and put up points, it was still the passing that was the elite thing at UCLA even, and that team just had a lot of shooters, and they were shooting a lot of threes, and so he was taking a lot of open shots. There weren't a ton of contested shots there, but it was the passing that was so exceptional for him there. And then over the summer and over the offseason, everything else kind of got built up, when really if you're looking at these prospects in a fair lighting, you should really just be excited about the passing and hope everything else develops for him.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and I should fix what I said. When I say one of the best point guards in the league, I don't mean like Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul in his prime or anything, but I do think he could be a good starting point guard, a higher end starting point guard.
Top 15.
Sure. Yeah, somewhere around there. Top 20, top 15. But being a top 20 point guard means you're a really good point guard. So that's where I feel like he could be at. But yeah, his passing is exceptional. I don't know how many players in the NBA pass as well as him. I mean, it's what? LeBron, Rubio, Harden. I mean, there's very few guys. Mark Gasol is a center, but he passes that well. There are very few guys that are able to find guys the way that Lonzo Ball does, and it's really exceptional to watch.
One other storyline before we get to your segment. Kawhi Leonard back. They lost in his debut. He played some pretty constricted minutes. He only had 16, I believe it was, throughout the night, but put up 13 points. How soon does it take for the San Antonio Spurs to be right back where they left off before his injury?
What were they, 19-8 coming into this game? I think they're there. Kawhi came back and they probably had to reshuffle the way that they've been doing things. They'll be fine. I think they'll be fine within a week. Like, I think they're fine right now.
Yeah.
Honestly. The Mavericks have beaten some good. They almost beat the Celtics a week before they almost beat the Wolves.
And they beat the Thunder.
Yeah, they've looked good, and they're still the worst team in the West right now, record-wise, and in a lot of ways, just, you know, team compilation-wise, but they're not a terrible team. Not in the same way that, say, like the Wolves 7 years ago were a terrible team. They have some good pieces, so it wasn't shocking to me. They'll be fine. The Spurs, I'm not worried about at all. Kawhi Leonard's back. They're going to look fantastic within a week.
Yeah, they're going to pump out another 60-win season without even really having to break a sweat. Because that's just what San Antonio does, because Pop's a crazy good coach.
Year? So they're going to lose only, 13 more games all year?
With the way they compensate for Kawhi is a really – Kawhi is an MVP-level player.
That's true.
And they just they play 19-8 without him, and now he's back. And I know that they're shuffling.
Oh, sorry, go.
I know there's shuffling that you have to do on a roster when a guy comes back, but this is Popovich. He's had a plan since he found out he was going to have Kawhi. He's had a plan of how to get him back in and how to work things. And this is I really feel like this is going to be another 60-win team just because of how well LaMarcus Aldridge has played. Now, maybe he goes back to old LaMarcus Aldridge the first couple years with the Spurs, but I really don't think so.
So for them to finish with 60 wins, that would mean, because they're 19-9 right now, that would mean that they're on pace in a little bit to be, 38-18? That would mean at that point in the year, they would need to, they would have already, wow, words. they could only lose four more games the rest of the season for that to happen, to get to 60 wins. I'm just saying, that's a lot.
And they got probably one of the top five, if not top three players back.
I would say top three for sure, or top five at least. No, I totally agree. But my only problem is that means that there are going to be 360 teams, 60 win teams in the West, probably, right?
Yeah.
The Spurs, the Rockets, and the Warriors. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes.
I don't know. I think that's going to be tough, man.
It definitely will be interesting, but there's also a lot of teams, I think, who are punching above their weight right now.
Who's that?
Well, okay, so first of all, who are the teams that came out flaming hot? Orlando, you've got New York's playing really well. Detroit came out really hot, and now they've started to kind of cool off. You have the Pelicans, who have started out really hot, and they're not exactly an exception.
Don't you think? Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, Boogie.
Drew Holiday is playing way better than I thought he was going to play. And
those three, I think, are good enough to make you a 500 team. And like to the point of the other teams you're mentioning, those are all Eastern Conference teams. The Spurs only play them twice.
Well, look at the teams in the West, though. You have Sacramento, Phoenix, the Lakers, Memphis, Dallas, those are all not great teams. Memphis, especially if they end up trading Gasol here. And the Clippers might end up blowing this thing up too if they lose a bunch of games before Blake Griffin comes back and they decide, you know what, let's not push Blake Griffin back quickly. Let's just rebuild this thing and have him come back when he's really fully 100%. You could potentially have almost anybody who's not making the playoffs as a bottom of the league team in the West.
Yeah, we were talking about this on Wolves Wired the other day. It's 1 through 3 is kind of its own tier, and then 4 through 9 are all really good in their own way. Like, the ninth place team is the Thunder. They still have a lot of talent. And then 10 through 15 in the West is bad. But even so, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, the Blazers, the Pelicans, the Jazz, and the Thunder are all good teams. The Spurs have to play all of them 4 times, and I'm not even counting the Rockets and the Warriors, who they also have to play 4 times. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that they have to play 4 times. That's 32 games. Just throwing that out there. They already have 9 losses. It's going to be tough. I'm not saying it's impossible. Colton, I'm not saying you're crazy.
You wouldn't be the first one.
Your way, but it's going to be very tough for that to happen.
I'm perfectly happy on the hill that I've chosen with Kawhi Leonard back.
It's a good hill.
It's not a bad hill, and the only thing that really derails this for me is if he plays for another couple of weeks, because we were talking about this with Lucas at the beginning of the year, is if he comes back and this is one of those injuries where his muscles and his legs could start spasming again after a couple of weeks of play, and he has to sit for another half a month or something like that, that could be the one thing that derails it, is if this is something that's going to be a season-long thing, as opposed to just, okay, now that he's back, he's put it behind him.
Yep. I mean, injuries always are the determining factor when it comes to wins and losses, right? I mean, Kawhi Leonard being hurt definitely hurts them.
That's true.
They've looked great without him.
Unless you're the Warriors and you have four Hall of Famers on your team.
Yes. Yes.
All right, we're going to get to the editor's choice right after this break. All right, so we have gone on pretty far here. I'm going to need you to give me your editor's choice. I'm going to need a speed round version of editor's choice. Tim, what do you got for us this week?
A speed round version, you say? All right, so I'm going to do this quickly.
If you could be bothered.
I'm going to credit our own site here. David Naylor, our own David Naylor, host of Wolves Wired, Colton Molesky's professor.
Every Friday, baby.
Every Friday. Friday night class or Friday afternoon class. Anyway, he wrote a thing titled The Timberwolves' Fourth Quarter Woes Symptomatic of Tom Thibodeau's Coaching. You would think that the answer was yes, just based on how people think. You might be surprised by what you see. I'll just leave it at that, since we're doing a speed round and I don't want to give too much away. The national piece I'm going to talk about is by an old pal of mine, Scott Rafferty, at Sporting News. He wrote a thing called How LeBron James Becomes the NBA's Biggest Bully When the Cavs Enter Crunch Time. He uses film, he goes through X's and O's, and really shows just how incredible LeBron James is. When they need him to score, he can do it at will. And he breaks it down beautifully, almost to a point that maybe the Cavs coaching staff wouldn't like. So I'll leave it at that. Go to sportingnews.com for that one.
By Cavs coaching staff, you mean LeBron James, right?
I didn't say that.
I love it. Go check out both of those. And as always, make sure you are constantly going on zonecoverage.com to check out all the great writers and all the great stories that we have posting on there daily. Go check those out for sure, as well as Wolves Wired, Tim's show, where he is talking about the Timberwolves, maybe not quite to the level that we do here on Locked. No, I'm just kidding. It's a great show as well. So go check out both those sites. Tim, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, and thank you for the half-assed compliment towards the end.
You came after my show, so I'm going to have to come. No, I'm just kidding. Final thought, Thibodeau, please don't kill Jimmy Butler. We love him a lot. Please don't do it. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.